Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 281st edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at onceametro.com, member of the SB Nation family, and also being broadcasted on the Ultimate Sports Talk website. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss some amongst yourselves if you like. If you have the ability to chat with me, go right ahead. And gotta say, I apologize for the little issue there, folks. I wasn't expecting my connection of my Skype to fall apart like that, but I'm back up now and very happy to talk to you today. I want to talk about, before we go discuss the topics of this show, for this show tonight, what's been going on with our U.S. Women's National Team players and the U.S. Soccer Federation. Now, let me just say this right now. I understand the crux of the matter of what the women are asking for. I understand why they are looking to make this sort of transition happen. Now, let me just say this. I believe in my heart, I do believe the women should be paid just like the men should. There should be no differences of the gender. There should be no differences of the pay scale. I believe that our women that has recently won the Women's World Cup in Canada last summer, they do deserve the same amount of pay that Clint Dempsey deserves, that Josie Altidor deserves, Michael Bradley deserves. Because, you know, we're at a point where for our women, they have finally gotten to a place where they should be treated as equals. And I think most women are treated as equals from my eyes. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I can only go by what I believe in and what probably most of you believe in. But I truly believe that our women deserve to be paid the same amount of money as the men do when it comes to this type of a situation. Now, all I can say is before I even get there, or is it not yet? I don't think, is it, what time is it? 8:04. Jake?
Yes, hello?
You're early.
I am early. I was calling in to listen, but I can go early if you'd like.
No, go ahead and listen, and I'll get you at 8:15.
Thank you, sir.
But anyway, as I was trying to say is this, I truly believe that the women that does wear our national team jerseys are entitled to the same pay as the men are, because we are at a point where, you know, everything is equal, all of our eyes, including my eyes, you know. It doesn't matter what business you're in. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, and what you do. The truth of the matter is this. Whether my boss is a male or a female, it doesn't matter to me. It just does not matter to me, because if they hold a certain title, they have earned that title. And if they are going to be my boss and they have to, tell me that I have to do this, I have to do that, yeah, I'm going to do it. You know, when I used to work with the Phoenix Communications Group, which was, of course, in the sports news industry on television, I had three supervisors. Two of them were male, and one of them was female, and I treated the female just as if she was a male. You know, she's my boss. I had to do what she asked me to do. It wasn't a decision I had to make. It is basically telling me, listen, we need you to do this, we need you to do that. Yes, miss. Yes, miss. Yes, miss. I will do this. I will do that. And you know what? Everything was fine. I didn't have an issue. I didn't have a problem. So it really shouldn't be a problem with what's been going on here. Obviously, this all stems when we had Charlie Flo on talking about this issue and what is going on with how the game has changed. But as I am talking here now with you about what the situation is tonight in this opening monologue, and to say, you know, to talk to you about all of this, and like I said, I believe in this. I don't believe there should be any more differences. It should be all similarities. But let me just say this, and like I said, I'm not changing my opinion. I'm not changing the way I'm thinking or feeling about this issue. I am not changing my mind. But the truth of the matter is this, and I try to bring in some truth into all of this as much as possible. And the truth is this, and I'm not, and like I said, I'm being truthful about it. Unfortunately, the men's game makes the world go round. That doesn't mean that I think of the women's game any less. It does not mean I think of the women's national team any less. The truth of the matter is this. I hope and pray that the NWSL does become the league that will remain alive in the United States and within North America to help the players, not just from the United States and Canada and Mexico, but of course, for those that are coming over here from around the world. Obviously, there's a women's league in England. There's a women's league in some of these European countries. There's a women's league in South America, maybe some in Central America, maybe even in Mexico, I'm not sure. But once again, I am not here to tell you what is right or what is wrong about the NWSL. What I would like to see is these leagues that are for women around the globe to get the same amount of fair treatment like the men's leagues do. Now, maybe some are and maybe some aren't. And the ones that aren't need to change. And they need to do it on their own. But once again, as I have said, it's about time that the women of our national team gets the same amount of pay like the men do. And it's time to do it now. I understand there's a lot of issues with what's been going on with this collective bargaining agreement. It's been spot on how the women and U.S. soccer have been fair to each other for the last several years, playing under an old agreement that it has already expired a long time ago. But truth of the matter is this, is that there needs to be a new agreement, there needs to be brand new everything, and the women should be paid fair and square. This is how I feel, this is what I believe, and once again, I know everyone's believing in it. And I would like to believe that when it's all said and done, that the U.S. Soccer Federation, all I can say is this, I hope and pray that they all come together and they come out with a fair result in brand new collective bargaining agreements. Because the truth of the matter is this. Things need to change from within. I do believe Sunil Gulati will be fair with this. I know it's been a long time. And I know that the women, they were, you know, troopers staying with the same contract, even though it was already expired. I do hope there's a good, clean handshake that comes out of this. I do hope that the women will be treated fairly from now on. And I truly hope, believe that everything will go well. And I really hope that finally we can end these, shall we say, these poor union collective bargaining negotiation tactics that are just unfair. It doesn't matter if it's for the guys or for the women. The men and the women need to be treated fairly on everything when it comes to these CBA negotiations. And I think it's about time that we finally end these shenanigans and let's just make everyone happy if it's possible. Because the truth is, like I said, the women need to be paid the same amount as the men's team does. I understand that there's a lot of these things going on here. I'm hoping that, you know, they get paid fairly for a friendly, like the men. Paid fairly for a World Cup qualifier, being paid fairly for a continental championship, being paid fairly when they do qualify and play in a World Cup. Because that's what needs to happen here. That's what needs to happen. Or else, maybe it's time to get a new president of U.S. Soccer. I'm only saying this because I want to see the women get paid fairly. But Sunil Gulati has done a good job running U.S. Soccer. So we can't really say, you know, maybe it's time to get rid of him, but the truth of the matter is this. He's done a good job so far. I would like to think that finally we're going to get somewhere and hopefully the women will finally get what's coming to them and what's easily theirs. Fair pay, regardless of your gender. Because that's what we need. And that's what has to happen. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is what I believe in. And it's about time that we start this. Now, once again, I know what I said about, you know, this game, the men's game makes the world.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully you can hear me now. I'm calling in to see what's going on here. I hope I got people listening in and having my issues with Skype at the moment. But we're going to see if I can try and fix this again. Joining me right now is Jake Dudinsky, as he is joining me today to talk about the U.S. Under-23s that unfortunately were eliminated in the Olympic qualifying playoffs. Jake, are you still there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. My Skype at the moment is having issues. So please go ahead.
Okay, I see that.
And,
yeah, I lost you there.
Yes, I know. You hear me there?
I can now. I couldn't hear you there for a minute, but I got you now.
Okay, good. So go ahead. How are you feeling about what's happened with the under-23s? Obviously, unfortunately, this is the second time in a row that the under-23s have been eliminated from the Olympics, qualifying for the Olympics. Your overall feeling so far of what's been going on during that qualifying tournament and the playoff against Colombia?
Well, I mean, it would be – I'd be lying to you if I told you I wasn't disappointed. It's obviously not fun to miss the Olympics for two consecutive cycles. That aside, we really have no one to blame but ourselves. There's no reason we should have even been in a playoff to get into the Olympics. But you and I have had this discussion off the air, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But just focusing on what happened in the Colombia game, I mean, we were just blatantly outplayed. I mean, we had a 1-1 scoreline going in, and really we had a lot of control going back to Frisco. We had, you know, we had control. We had the road goal. All we really had to do was just either get a goal or, you know, hold them scoreless. And it just seems like the passion wasn't there. And again, it's frustrating because, as I'll keep saying repeatedly, we shouldn't have been in that playoff to begin with. And so I think that some of it comes down to player choice and who played in that game. Some of it, I believe, also comes down to coaching decisions. And a lot of it just comes down to an overall breakdown from the very top, from Gulati down to Klinsmann all the way down to the U23s. And it's unfortunate because in order for people to get excited about, you know, the sport that we love, we have to be in these marquee events. And when people tune in to see the Olympic soccer in Brazil, they're going to be watching the men and trying to figure out where the U.S. is. And it's not a good light. So I guess in hindsight and in overall, yeah, it's not as big as, you know, let's say missing the World Cup, but it still hurts, Dan.
No, it does hurt because you want to see our kids, our young players, get an opportunity to play against some of the top prospects in the world. And as of right now, they missed London, and now they're missing Rio. And there has to be some answers to these questions of why this has happened. I guess the main question is this. Is our talent pool, is it talented enough to make the Olympics right now? Or do you think maybe certain players that were at Columbus for the World Cup qualifier against Guatemala at home, do you think maybe Christian Pulisic should have been with the Olympic qualifying team in the playoff?
Well, I mean, I think that, again, it goes back to, you know, the general agreement that it's a top-down breakdown, you know, in player personnel choice. I think that, you know, we had a guy like Pulisic, and, you know, he could have potentially helped that team tremendously. And, yeah, I get it, you know, we wanted to cap tie him, and that's all well and good, and it's important. But is it worth missing the Olympics for? I also think that some of the management decisions by our coaching, that wasn't too great. And I'd also like to point out that I don't entirely blame the players, although a lot of the blame does go on them. Dan, as you know, my view on the officiating in our neck of the woods is not a favorable one. And in both of those games, there were some very questionable calls that I think that you and I could do a two-hour show just on that.
Probably so, but still, though, once again, this is not a CONCACAF issue. This is not a CONMEBOL issue. This is a FIFA issue, obviously, because the referees are being picked by FIFA as well as the Olympic Organizing Committee, because technically, you know, while this is a FIFA-sanctioned event, it's also a Olympic event as well to qualify for the Olympics. So, obviously, you're going to have people that are representing both bodies, and how they pick their officials to, or at least pick the people that are the referees from a certain confederation or a certain country that has no stake in this game to officiate this match properly. Do you feel both matches were officiated properly?
You know, I don't want to get too much into it because I feel like it's a lame duck excuse to blame the refs. But in this particular case, and Dan, you watched the game, I feel like the officiating in both of these matches was questionable at best. I feel as though, you know, this is not to say that the U.S. would have gone through either way, but you can't sit here with a straight face and say that the officiating didn't have an impact on the game. And at the end of the day, you never want, as a fan or as a player or even as a coach, or I would imagine as an official, you never want to be the deciding factor of a game of that magnitude. And, you know, while I wouldn't say it was entirely them, they definitely had a deciding factor, I believe, in the ultimate outcome. Now, that being said, I want to make this very clear. I think Colombia mm-hmm. outplayed the U.S. in both games, mm-hmm. and I think Colombia deserved to win that home and away series because they were by far the better team.
Mm-hmm.
But as you and I have learned on numerous occasions, sometimes the better team doesn't always win because it's just the way it is. Now, you mentioned the player pool. I don't buy the argument that our player pool isn't as strong as these other countries. I think that we have a lot of options in our player pool, but I think that, again, the decision on who's going to play in these games is questionable. And I just think that overall it's not been a good showing. And, you know, when the head manager of the U.S. senior team comes out and says, our main goal this cycle is to make the Olympics, and you fail to do that, what does that say?
It says that at this moment the World Cup is more important than the Olympics right now, because it shows that there's been a lot of issues currently, shall we say, in this current cycle of World Cup qualifying going to Russia. And Jurgen Klinsmann, of course, you know, they had a poor performance in Guatemala City and losing 2-0 on the road against a Guatemala team that probably shouldn't have deserved a sniff of the net. And it showed when the U.S., when they are focused, when they are energized, and when they are ready to go out and pummel their opposition at home, it just goes to show you that, you know, when you put effort and energy into your performance, that you're going to get the result that you were looking for, especially winning 4-0 in Columbus.
And this is my biggest complaint with both the U-23s and the national team, is that we're not bad. It would be one thing if we were a bad, you know, team, and then you wouldn't mind these losses to Guatemala and to Colombia. But the fact of the matter is that they're not a bad team. They just haven't been playing motivated, or they've been played in positions that these players haven't played before. And, you know, I think that there is a time and a place to experiment with stuff. I mean, you know, obviously you have to play around with the lineups and try different formations to get something to work. But I've always been a believer that that's why we play friendlies. And
yep, that's very true.
Qualifying and Olympic qualifiers are not the place to decide, you know what, today we're going to try a different formation that we've never run before, because as you can see, that doesn't work.
Very true. At the moment, it's not working. Well, unfortunately, we've been eliminated. We're not going to Rio this summer. And I guess it's up to see what's going to happen if Klinsmann, if he does get another 4 years, or they're going to go somewhere else. We'll see what happens. But
and
while
Dana,
we are talking to you right now, Jake, as we have a couple minutes left here in this segment, talk about DC United right now. Obviously, you got Tally Hall signed by the club to replace at the moment an injured Andrew Dykstra, as well as an injured Bill Hamid. But what do you feel DC needs to do in these next couple of games? And at the same time, what else is going on with DC United that you feel that you need to discuss?
Well, before I go into that, Dan, I'd like to comment on your statements about the U.S. women's national team for a minute, if that's okay.
Fine.
If that's all right with you, sir.
That's fine. Go ahead.
So I am a firm believer, and this is going to get me a lot of heat. I am a firm believer that the U.S. women's national team should be paid equally. Obviously, this is a no-brainer. Women at every job should never be paid less just because they're a woman. That being said, part of the reason why they aren't paid as much, and this is unfortunate, but it's true, is that the women's game doesn't bring in as much money. And it's unfortunate because, you know, our U.S. women's team is probably one of the brightest spots of soccer in this country. I mean, we just won the World Cup. But that being said, it's unfortunate that they don't bring in as much money as the men do. And I think that that is part of the argument. Now, I still don't think that's a valid reason to pay them less. But I think that that is something that you're going to hear a lot of people say. And so I just wanted to throw that out there, that personally, if it was my call, I don't think there's any discussion here. Of course, we should pay them equally. But at the same time, that is, I believe, the reason why they aren't.
And that's fine. And that's okay. I mean, look, if that's – I mean, you're taking a very honest look into the subject. And hopefully that's not the case. But if it is, then it needs to change. That's all. It's really simple. It just needs to change. And hopefully U.S. Soccer will understand this. And hopefully, like I said, that we all come to, they all come to an agreement that they like and they understand. And hopefully these changes will happen. But go ahead. What's your the other things we were talking about earlier? Go ahead.
So here's my take on DC United's season so far. We haven't won a game. We have had chances to win games. And apparently all of our goalkeepers are at this point living in a bubble because they're dropping like flies. I mean, I don't know what's going on with our goalkeeping core, but it seems like every day another one of them is getting injured. Now, that being said, with the except for the Dallas game, DC hasn't played that terribly. They've had a lot of good looks. They just can't finish. And, you know, they've had goal being questioned. So I think what they need to do to kind of right the ship here, if you will, is, A, they got to figure out how to score. I mean, that you're not going to win regardless of how good you play defensively if you can't score. That's number one. Number two, they need to figure out how, when they have a lead, to close out games. Number three, they need to fix their goalkeeping problems. It's unfortunate, but I feel like at this point, DC United is just having open tryouts for anybody that can play goalie. I feel like it's at that level at this point. And probably lastly, and most importantly is, and I hate to say this because, you know, he's such a nice guy, but we need to formation and run with it. And as much as I hate to say this, I don't feel like Ben Olsen is the right person for the job currently. I mean, it's nothing against him as a person. But you look at his track record since he's been the coach, and it hasn't added up. And I hate to say it, but I feel like when there's such great coaching talent out there available, and you know the team is trying to rebrand and the team is trying to get this new stadium, you got to have a winning product on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And the style that Ben plays just isn't working. And that's not entirely his fault. The front office hasn't really helped him a lot by giving him a lot of monetary assets at his disposal, but
right.
You know, great managers find ways to win even without great players.
Yeah.
I mean, the best find a way. And
that's right.
I'm in the camp that thinks, you know, Jason Kreis, as far as I know, is still not coaching. And if I'm DC United, I'd at least give him a call and offer him an assistant coach position. I mean, and then potentially move him up. I mean, what do you have to lose? I mean, what is the worst thing case that happens? But currently, you know, it gets frustrating because 2013, it's like 2013 all over again. We can't figure it out. And I get it. You know, these things happen. And Dan, you being a Red Bulls fan, you know, you are used to what I'm going through. And, you know, DC United is hit or miss. Sometimes they're really terrible in the first half and they'll turn it on in the second half. And sometimes it's just a wash. But I feel as of this moment currently, we might break our own record for worst season in MLS history.
Yeah. I mean, right now, it looks like all I can say is this, Jake, is that right now there's a lot of issues on DC United that really needs to be fixed. I am not disagreeing with you. They really, really have to fix all these things that are going on. And all I can tell you is that, you know, unless ownership changes their minds, excuse me, and unless the ownership fix their own issues, then unfortunately it's going to be as is. And I know you don't want to hear that, but the truth of the matter is it could be as is, and let's see what happens if they
hear. The one bright spot that I got to say, though, is the Acosta from Boca Juniors. That guy can play. I mean, if there's anything that's giving me any hope for the rest of the season, it's Acosta. I mean, I am overjoyed we were able to get him and have on his contract the option to sign him at the end of this year.
Yeah,
so
but then again, that's great, Jake. But the truth of the matter is, you got to find someone else to help him join you guys as well. So I mean, you know, what are you gonna do?
I agree, Dan. And this is the joy of being an MLS supporter. You never quite know what you're going to get, do you?
No. You just got to play the Forrest Gump card.
So, with that in mind, Dan, thank you for having me, as always.
No problem at all. Thank you for being on.
Oh, yeah, no, and I'm sure we'll talk numerous times throughout the year as DC United works their way toward the quest for less than 3 wins. and I will be here to cheer them on all the way. And
believe me,
I will have the T-shirts ready and the champagne should we not get to that magical 3-win mark.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you have a good night, Jake, and I'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Take it easy, Dan.
All right, take care. Jake Dudinsky over in our nation's capital. And, of course, let's not forget, thank him for talking about what's going on with the under-23s. Finally, got the right one on. And here it is right now. My good friend Neil Morris, of course, the NCAA Final Four Championship game is going on as we speak. but he was able to record this with me as we talk about the North American Soccer League with their brand new television deals. Mr. Neil Morris of WRAL Sports Fan in the Raleigh, Durham, Cary, North Carolina Triangle area.
Welcome back, the American Soccer Show, of course, and we're going to talk about some great news for the North American Soccer League, and that is, of course, these brand new broadcast deals made for the NASL. And talking about these deals, of course, is my good friend Neil Morris from WRAL Sports Fan down in Cary, Raleigh, and Durham, North Carolina. Thank you for joining me, Neil. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on as well. So this is big news here. My goodness, it's unbelievable. We have not just One World Sports, not just ESPN3 or Watch ESPN that's going to be broadcasting these games, but now we have beIN Sports and CBS Sports Network, as they are now joining in with these other two to broadcast matches for the North American Soccer League.
Yeah, it seemed as though the opening weekend of the NASL, or on the eve, the week before, there was suddenly the fruition of all these rumors that we've been hearing about possible broadcast partners for the NASL for several weeks, if not months. Obviously, the league re-upped with ESPN3 for online streaming, and they're going to be presenting over 100 NASL matches this year, by far the largest league partner. One World Sports will still have a Game of the Week feature throughout the season, in addition to exclusive broadcast rights for the New York Cosmos. But then the two big news was, first, the announcement that beIN Sports was a new league broadcast partner. They will also be offering a Game of the Week broadcast over the course of the entire year, over 34 matches at least, and that began this weekend with the first game involving Miami FC at Fort Lauderdale Strikers. And a lot of people thought that that was the big news, and that the rumors had been for weeks that it was going to be beIN Sports or CBS Sports Network. But the next day, it was announced that CBS Sports Network was also going to be a partner this year. They were going to broadcast 12 matches beginning in the league's fall season. So the first CBS Sports Net game will not be until July 2nd. And then they will broadcast 12 games of the week through over the course of the fall season from July 2nd through October 30th. So it's created a bit of a fragmented broadcast presentation. I've joked on Twitter that you need a Venn diagram to figure out who's broadcasting what games from week to week, especially when you start factoring in the individual clubs and their local broadcast deals. But without a doubt, not just in subscriber numbers, but cachet, these are big deals for the league, for the NASL. Big deals for a league that 5 or 6 years ago, the best broadcasting deal that they could offer was a deal with Ustream. We're a long way from the Ustream days in 2016.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, two big games here on this schedule for CBS Sports Network, of course. Carolina Railhawks versus Miami FC on Friday, July the 22nd at 7:30 p.m. in the fall, as well as I guess it's a return meeting on Wednesday, September the 14th, which will be on at 8 p.m. on CBS Sports Network. But it's also interesting to note here, Neil, is that not just these networks are going to be a part of the NASL, but now Goal TV is going to be the official broadcaster for Miami FC games, both home and on the road, when they're not on either ESPN or beIN Sports or CBS.
That's right. And you don't have to be an insider or an expert on television deals to connect the dots and figure out that there's a high probability that the common denominator between Miami's Goal TV deal, the beIN Sports deal, the CBS Sports Network deal, all of them coming in quick succession, is the arrival and influence of Ricardo Silva, the owner of MP and Silva and the owner of the Miami FC Club. his arrival in the boardroom, no matter how Miami FC does on and off the field this season, you've already seen the influence of his arrival. These TV deals, at least I'm sure in some part, are motivated by his connections through his company.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's also interesting, looking at these deals, and it's interesting because One World Sports, as we already know, they're still going to do their Game of the Week for the league, but none of these broadcasts are going to have the New York Cosmos, and I think that's a little bit concerning because if you're going to do a deal with all these major networks, or at least these networks that are providing broadcasts for these clubs in the North American Soccer League, I mean, shouldn't the Cosmos be also considered in one of these major deals? I mean, at least to have them on beIN Sports as well as CBS Sports Network, because not everybody gets One World Sports.
Well, it goes deeper than that, frankly. It's not just hoping that as many people are able to see the Cosmos as possible. It's a factor of, yes, there's no denigrating the deals that the NASL reached this week with the broadcast partners that they did. I think they're probably all based on an ad revenue split arrangement, with the exception of perhaps the CBS Sports Network deal, who my good friend Wes Burdine in Minnesota has reported, based on his sourcing, that the league may be paying for coverage for that deal. That notwithstanding, I don't want to denigrate these deals because they're major steps forward for the league, as I said before. But I think it's incumbent to point out, as the league moves forward, that when you go to negotiate broadcasting deals on behalf of a sports league, to not be able to incorporate or offer your most popular brand, which the Cosmos undoubtedly are, in the number one television market in the country, handicaps the league. It just does, no matter how great the influence of Ricardo Silva is. And not only did the Cosmos not participate in these deals, but at least the road Cosmos games last year were available on ESPN3. I've heard from several sources that this year that might not even be the case, that Cosmos home and away games will be limited to One World Sports, meaning when the Cosmos go to play at Tampa Bay or at Carolina, that the only league provider for those games is going to be One World Sports. Obviously, those teams will have their local broadcast arrangements, but the Cosmos are able to declare which league arrangement is going to carry their road games as first, road games as well. And frankly, I think that's a little bit of an issue that bears watching, because as I said before, it's all about being able to increase your broadcast footprint, and we've seen that the NASL has already gone to Miami. They announced a major market in San Francisco last week. Peter Wild is trying to get a team off the ground in Chicago. These are major TV markets. But if you go to the negotiating table, no matter who is pulling the strings or helping things along, and you don't have your most popular brand in your number one TV market, that is not good for the league. And the Cosmos like to brag that they bring a lot to the table for the NASL, and they do. But if they're not going to be there to help sort of broaden the league's broadcasting cachet, then what are they doing?
Exactly, and that's the issue here I have with the Cosmos, because if you are claiming to be the best club in this league again, and if, of course, you just won the NASL Soccer Bowl again at the end of the 2015 season, and the NASL is trying to provide all these deals so that not just the Cosmos, but every other club in their league gets enough presence broadcasting-wise, I think this is basically shooting yourself in the foot, Neil, and I think the Cosmos are going all wrong in this. I mean, I understand you're trying to make sure you have your, what's rightfully yours and stuff like that going for them. But you know what? It's not just for your hometown fans. I mean, everyone wants to see this club being broadcasted nationally.
Well, and again, it requires a little bit of speculation on my part. I can maybe surmise, you know, One World Sports is owned by this, in large part by the same group that owns the Cosmos. So maybe it's a situation whereby by keeping their team on their platform that they're able to keep the majority, if not all, of the ad revenue. So maybe it's a financial situation, no matter how big the subscriber base is. But nevertheless, regardless of that, though, I mean, you know, teams in the NASL have autonomy to craft their own local broadcast deals. You just talked about Miami doing one with Gold TV. But their Gold TV deal is not to the exclusion of all other deals, and nor is the Carolina Railhawks, who have a local TV deal with Capital Broadcasting in Raleigh and also Time Warner Cable throughout North and South Carolina this year. Those are local and regional broadcast deals, but they're not to the exclusion of these two major ones that we announced. But at some point, all these individual clubs are members of a league. And pooling resources and market size and everything else is sort of imperative when it comes to negotiating league broadcast deals. So, again, I don't want to take anything away from the steps that the league made this year, despite what we're talking about. But it bears wondering if the Cosmos had been part of these deals, what else could the league have accomplished or leveraged?
That's probably correct, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully it's just for this year, and maybe there'll be some issues being solved for the 2017 season. But for right now, Neil, overall, Major League Soccer has both ESPN, Fox Sports 1 for English language coverage. They have the Univision/Unimas Friday night Spanish language broadcast network, of course. Now you have the NASL, not just on One World Sports, not just on ESPN's digital platform for streaming, but now it's beIN Sports, and now it's CBS Sports Network, and of course locally and as well internationally for Miami FC on Gold TV. What do you think the NASL has now achieved here? Can we say the NASL is on par with MLS, or are they still behind a little bit?
Oh, they're far behind. I mean, let's not get crazy. The NASL has taken some tremendous steps, but to say that they're on a par with a league that has a multi-million dollar deal, no matter whether it's coupled in part with U.S. soccer or not, I mean, MLS has a wider geographic scope. They have a wider base. They have a far more lucrative deals, not just domestically, but foreign as well, by the way. And they're on a major Fox network and a major ESPN network, in addition to all the streaming platforms. Now, this is not about whether the NASL has caught up with MLS, because they haven't, and nor should that even be the barometer. I always say that those who try to compare NASL to MLS are just missing the boat. They need to be comparing NASL today to NASL 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. That's the comparison that needs to be made, and that's why I brought up earlier, as opposed to judging, you know, it's fine to have Major League Soccer as a goal to shoot towards or a motivating factor. That's fine. But for a 5 to 6 year old league to now be on broadcast channels like CBS Sportsnet or beIN Sports or whatever, whereas a few years ago they were on a flailing online streaming platform that hardly anybody got and certainly didn't work very well, is a major step forward. So, the NASL is not on par with Major League Soccer, but it shouldn't be. And if it was, then that would be more of an indictment to MLS than something great to say about the NASL.
Well, Neil, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And let's see if this new partnerships with the NASL becomes big and fruition, and hopefully everything will be going very well. Thank you again, and talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks, Daniel.
And that is Neil Morris from WRAL Sports Fan, WRAL of Cary, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, as he covers the Carolina RailHawks North American Soccer League. Now let's go ahead and talk about what happened in the first week of the spring season. Let's go straight once again, remaining in Cary, North Carolina, Wake Med Soccer Park, a 2-1 victory for Carolina RailHawks. And boy, oh boy, if you were watching this on the ESPN3 platform, my God, Christian Ramirez, what a hell of a goal that was as he chips the keeper. Chips Akira Fitzgerald in goal for Carolina, and that was a sensational shot. I got to tell you, wonder goals galore in this one as Ramirez finds a way to convert that shot early in the match in the second minute. But 11 minutes later, Ty Cipollone, what a chip from him, catches Sammy Najak off his line, chips him as well, and it lands perfectly inside the net, and that tied the score at one apiece. But the match winner was Austin Deleuze as he converts off a great header from Moses on the cross, and that made it 2-1 Carolina RailHawks, and they would win this one by a final of 2-1. The only negative for Carolina in this match, Simon Mensing, who got sent off on a straight red card late in this one in the 88th minute. And unfortunately, he'll be missing the next game next week for the RailHawks. Once again, final. Carolina RailHawks 2, Minnesota United only 1. And now we head on over to an interesting matchup down at Lockhart Stadium. A 1-1 draw between the Fort Lauderdale Strikers against the brand new Miami FC that you saw on BeIN Sports for the first time. It was Miami FC earning a penalty, and converting it was Dario Cvetanić. And it was all Miami FC throughout the match. But then we saw Miami FC going down to 10 men. Jorge Luis Corrales getting his first yellow card in the 21st minute. And then towards first half stoppage time, he gets booked a second time on a very, very terrible challenge. Second yellow card of the match. Full red shown. And Miami FC is down to 10 men. And then a penalty called late in second half stoppage time as Maicon Santos took the penalty, ran up to it, buried it, and the season at Lockhart Stadium finishes off with a 1-1 draw. Of course, the next two matches are all scoreless draws. Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting the Indy 11, and that's the One World Sports matchup for the game of the week. And really nothing much here, just a couple of yellow cards here and there, unfortunately. Fortunately for Indy 11, it's a draw, and I think that's a good start for after what happened last year with the Indy 11, of course. Now they're being managed by Tim Hankinson and the Tampa Bay Rowdies right now. Starting off on a poor foot here with a home draw, which is what they didn't want. And, of course, the next match, which was 0-0, Oklahoma City, Rayo OKC, hosting the FC Edmonton, the Eddies. And for Edmonton, Albert Watson getting a straight red card on a very tough tackle there. And his card came in the 30th minute. Edmonton down a man, playing with 10 men the rest of the way, but Rayo OKC could not take advantage over at Miller Stadium, and the final would be a scoreless draw. But congratulations to expansion side Rayo OKC Oklahoma City as they get their first ever point in the NASL. So congratulations to them. And, of course, the rematch of the Soccer Bowl final, which was over at Long Island at James M. Stewart Stadium on the campus of Hofstra University. The New York Cosmos defeating Ottawa Fury by a final of 3-0. Juan Arango gets a brace in the first half. He gets the first goal in the 36th minute, and then he gets his second goal 2 minutes later. And then the third goal came for the Cosmos in the 71st minute. Adam Moffitt getting his tally for the 2016 spring season. So right now, Paul Dalglish's side is behind in this one as the Ottawa Fury fall on Long Island and lose to the New York Cosmos by a final of 3-0. Once again, your final score, New York Cosmos 3, Ottawa Fury 0. And at the moment in the standings, you're seeing the New York Cosmos and the Carolina RailHawks tied on points, but the differential at the moment, the Cosmos lead 3-0. And Carolina on a +1, Miami FC, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, FC Edmonton, Indy 11, Tampa Bay Rowdies, Rayo OKC, all with a point. Minnesota United, nothing. Ottawa Fury, nothing. Jacksonville Armada did not play this week. They'll start next week. So they haven't played a match yet. So they are currently ninth. It doesn't really matter in this point in time. Here is your schedule now for the next couple of games, the second round of the North American Soccer League's spring season. On Saturday, April 9th, on beIN Sports at 7:30 p.m., Indy 11 will be hosting the Ottawa Fury in their home opener. You can watch that on beIN Sports. Miami FC hosting the Tampa Bay Rowdies at 8 o'clock Eastern. That will be seen on ESPN3. Also on April 9th at 8 o'clock Eastern, Oklahoma City, Rayo OKC, will host the Carolina RailHawks. That match will be seen on One World Sports. And then on Sunday, April the 10th, FC Edmonton will be hosting Minnesota United. That will be seen on ESPN3 nationally. And then, of course, at 6 o'clock Eastern time, New York Cosmos will be hosting the Jacksonville Armada on April the 10th at 6 p.m. Eastern. That will be on One World Sports as well. So get ready for some action, ladies and gentlemen. Get ready for something exciting. And you know what? It's wonderful to have the NASL back getting ready to go. And, of course, let's not forget some pretty good things happening with the NASL. Just a comment on the television side of things. You know, it's really great to see the NASL getting these partners now, not just the ESPN that they're putting most of their games on the platform. And of course, One World Sports is a part of the NASL, and of course they own the New York Cosmos, and they were always going to be on their channel regardless. But still, to have One World Sports adding on a game of the week themselves. Excuse me. Sorry about that. It's very exciting, too. But to see beIN Sports get involved, and I have to admit, I really thought beIN Sports was going to put a crew out there, maybe, because some of the teams are local in Miami and Fort Lauderdale area, or at least go to Jacksonville and Tampa Bay if possible. But it looks like they're going to be taking the feed from the actual games that are being shown from the, shall we say, from the feed coming from the home broadcast crew. So we'll see what happens there. But still, it's still good to see beIN Sports being a part of this and showing the NASL. But here's what's also pretty cool, too. Goal TV showing the full season of Miami FC. And, of course, my good friend Juan Arango doing double duty. Not only is he calling play-by-play on Oklahoma City Energy games, now he'll be analyzing Miami FC games. And that's the Oklahoma City Energy of the USL, now doing Miami FC analyzing on Gold TV that everyone can see. Now, if you don't have Gold TV, go ahead and take a look. I know I should still have Gold TV on my television set, so it should be interesting to see what's going to happen here. But, you know, I personally cannot wait to see what's going to happen, and I personally cannot wait to see what will happen here when thing is going to come to fruition and everything will be absolutely fantastic as we get ready for some of these games with the NASL, and it should be interesting to watch. And, of course, let's not forget what's going to happen in the spring season, excuse me, the fall season. Puerto Rico FC is coming over. So it's going to be very, very exciting to watch. It's going to be fun to see what's going to happen, and we're going to get going here and move forward with the show here. But once again, join me next week, of course, for another exciting show, the 40 Saints Fire American Soccer Show on Monday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. And then, of course, for the Red Bulls, they'll be on the road after their current home match this coming weekend against Sporting Kansas City. They'll be on the road at San Jose Earthquakes in the midweek and then at the Colorado Rapids next Saturday. So it should be very, very exciting. It should be fantastic to watch. And once again, the 40 Saints Fire American Soccer Show is right here for you. The true American soccer show with real heart, real passion for the game in the United States. No one can duplicate it. No one can imitate it because it's all right here within my heart and body and soul. So please, as always, true heart and passion for the game in this country, come to blogtalkradio.com/ Feuerstein's Fire. And it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And you know you cannot miss a single episode of everything going on. Once again, real quick before we move into the Red Bulls hour, this Wednesday, U.S. Soccer getting ready. The Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Round 1 draw should be coming out this Wednesday. And, of course, let's also not forget that potential matchups for Round 2 will also come out later today. It should be a lot of fun. It should be very, very exciting. And I personally cannot wait for it. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be exciting to watch. So get ready, ladies and gentlemen. And for those of you that still have Gold TV, of course, here on the Optimum Cablevision, channel 233. So should be a lot of fun when you're watching some Miami FC games from the NASL on Gold TV. Now we're going to go ahead and talk about what has happened here, what the situation is, because the truth of the matter is this. I am disgusted by what I saw this past Friday night against the New England Revolution as the New York Red Bulls were trying to earn either their second win of the season or their first draw of the season. You know, watching ESPN FC today, of course, they're talking about the situation that happened with Kemar Lawrence going straight down on
Yeah, I mean, you know, just one player saw him, but their whole team saw him. So that part for me is shameful. And, you know, the other part is that, you know, the referee has such a huge impact on this game by having a bad performance. So I don't know, you know, for me, he can blow the whistle when a guy's down like that. He can give a red card to Bradley Red Phillips when he's in on a breakaway and he gets pushed and shoved from behind and it's prevented from getting a clear shot. Could be a red card penalty. How does that affect the game? So, you know, I'll stop talking about that right now, but I wanted to get that out. I wanted to make a point of that. The next part I'm going to go to is that our team played great. Our team had fight. Our team stuck together, had confidence. Even a man down played quite well, and we're the better team. So, you know, it's frustrating to lose, but in many ways, I think that was a great performance for us, and we're unlucky to not walk out of here with something. Well, you just say the game's still there and keep pushing, and they did. So, you know, I mean, it's obviously an incredibly frustrating moment, but we stuck with the game, and we were actually a bit unlucky not to find a goal. So.
Did you say to Geiger, the referee, that's the game?
I didn't say anything. I said enough during the game. So.
What did you say to Tom Cole?
Tommy and I had a little exchange, but it was fun. Frustration. Yeah. No. Yeah, I thought Carl had his best game as a Red Bull player. Thought he was very good. Good in the air. Shut down their attacking players. You know, I'm not sure why they switched Aguadella and Bunbury, but neither of those guys were able to find the game much. So, and a lot of that credit goes to the work that Carl and Kamara did. The whole back line I thought was very good. Very good. Didn't give much away.
Jesse, go to your left.
Okay.
There was some question about Kamara's fitness before the game. Would you put him out there if you know he was going to go down?
Well, I mean, there wasn't really much question because he came out of the game in the 60th minute, but it was like a whack to his ankle, so he felt fine. He actually came back. The day he came back, he did a reach-in, and yesterday he trained, and he looked great, so there wasn't any issues there. And again, we're hopeful that it's not too bad. Yes.
Was this an injury that had to do with the turf?
Don't know enough about that yet.
Going back to football, you just see the line set down at the right place. You mentioned that the switch between Aguilar and Bunbury. Is that something that you were anticipating that was going to happen? Like, what matches were you supposed to play?
Well, we knew that they were going to try to play long balls to Connor Lane and try and win aerial duels there, so we were prepared for that. We weren't sure if Davies or Aguadella was going to feature. We talked about dealing with all their different qualities of their attacking players, and, you know, our two teams know each other pretty well, so there's not a lot of surprises.
Anything else, guys?
And that is head coach Jesse Marsh on what happened down, or shall I say up, in Foxborough, you know, and of course, Jesse Marsh not happy with the red card that Felipe got, and hopefully they have talked to the disciplinary committee and they will inform them that the red card challenge should be rescinded. And this is the hope that you have, because here's the thing with the disciplinary committee. They've been so inconsistent with how they judge what is considered to be a red or what is deemable to be suspended or as a suspension. So all I can say is that I hope, I really do hope, that this red card Felipe got, which was a joke, a travesty, a mockery, a sham, it's a travesty, sham, mockery, it's a sham, mockery. So we'll see what happens as we get going. So all I can say is it's just a tough one to see. Let's go to Luis Robles now. Of course, he got booked complaining to Mark Geiger about that poor decision from him on the Kemar Lawrence being injured and down. So here's Robles' comments on it.
Just talk about that. that result. Obviously, it felt like it kind of was hinging on that one play where Kamara goes down. They managed to get one behind the defense and they score. Was that kind of the...
I mean, that's the result, right? On that one play. That was the only goal. 1-0. I mean, whatever. I guess there's unwritten rules about when a player goes down, but when they saw that he clearly went down, when the referee is looking at him and evaluating the situation, I just feel like... I know the rule is something about head injuries. You definitely call. If he feels like the guy is significantly injured, then he has to blow the whistle. And I mean, from my understanding, Kamara went off right away, so it feels like it's significant.
When you see a play like that, does that come down to the referee, or does it come down to the opposite team picking the ball out of bounds?
I guess it's hard to put on one or the other, but you like to think that in that situation, you'd have an understanding of what sportsmanship's like.
In terms of just the game overall, Jesse said this was a great performance from your team, other than obviously giving up that goal. What did you see from your team today?
Absolutely. The guys left on the field. They competed hard, put out a lot of grit. We won a lot of second balls. We made it very difficult for them. In my opinion, we played better than them on their own field. But I also understand, you know, they haven't got a win yet, so there's a bit of a desperation there. So, you know, it is what it is.
Luis, makeshift back four tonight. Seemed like the guys that came in really did their job.
They played excellent. Absolutely played excellent. Kamara, Carl, they left it on the field. Even when we brought Chris Duvall, who I don't know if he's ever played center back. I know from in the professional level he's never played, so they did great. And then, of course, the guys on the outside, Sal and Connor, who a lot of times was drawing mismatches, but he still countless times won the ball over his opponent. So from that standpoint, the guys in the back, they left it on the field, and that's something to be proud of. But at the end of the day, we leave with no points.
From a morale perspective, how does it compare with, you know, as you say, you feel like you were the better team in losing or getting played off the park? Can you at least take some positives from that?
Sure. I mean, I think in every situation, you should be able to draw some positives, and this one, there's plenty of those. It just stings a little bit to play the way that we did and for all of it to come down on one play. And then, actually, it was a second play. It was very questionable with the red card, so, you know, I just... We'll have to go back and look at it, and I'm pretty sure there's an appeal process for that.
What's your take on the red card?
My take from where I was standing, which is quite a bit away, so I mean, it has to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I have seen the play, and it looked to me, I'm a little biased, but it looked to me that Felipe got the ball first. Could have been a foul, sure. Could have been a yellow, red, it's tough.
That is Luis Robles on what he saw from his vantage point. And once again, it's a shame to talk about this. Look, I don't want to talk about referees and their screw-ups. I don't want to talk about how a referee, you know, impacted a game that, you know, this poor decision changed the dynamics of a game because you know what happened? I'll tell you what happened. The Red Bulls had a very good first half. Sure, they didn't have shots on frame. I mean, they had chances to put it on frame, and they did. It just went right at Shuttleworth, and he made saves. You know, you can't even talk about the save Robles made on Juan Agudelo taking a shot from maybe 40 feet away, 40 yards away, 50 yards away maybe, going towards goal on a long, high chip, and Robles was there to put a two-hander on the ball to keep it out. You know, you can't talk about that. Why? Because of what the referee did, what this referee has done to impact the game, and basically everyone on Twitter was going against him because it was the worst decision you've ever seen. Not just one decision, two decisions that impacted the game. If that is a red card offense, then I need to see Felipe with a stomping motion on Kellen Rowe to break his ankle. That's a red card challenge. If that's a red card challenge, fine. Studs up. Well, listen, what is considered studs up, to be honest here? His studs were showing. No kidding, because, you know, if you're trying to get the ball and at the same time you're trying to play the ball and you're trying to put yourself in a position to play the ball, then your studs are going to go up. The same thing. I mean, who remembers what happened when Lloyd Sam got sent off down in Chester when the Red Bulls were at the Philadelphia Union? Why? And even Taylor Twellman said on ESPN, that looks like a very clumsy, you know, that looked like an awkward challenge. Of course it was awkward because the player for the Union slid into Lloyd Sam because Sam was trying to stop himself and his, you know, his studs were showing – true. Studs were showing. But did he stomp on the player? No. The player slid into Lloyd Sam's studs. So in all honesty, Sam, who did not create the contact, unfortunately was the victim of a poor red card because he was trying to stop himself and his right foot, showing studs, got slid into. So if you really think about it, that red card should have been rescinded as well because of the actions of the aggressor, which was not Sam. Was it a typical foul, a typical challenge? Yes. Why is that being given a red card? Because studs were showing. Well, yeah, I need to see more than studs are showing. Tell me what you're seeing. Tell me what it is. Because I can show you many, many other challenges in this league, in world football, that will tell you that that challenge is not egregious enough to be sent off. It's a foul? Fine. Is it a regular challenge? Fine. Is it a foul? Yes. You want to give it a yellow card? Okay, fine. Maybe a yellow. Maybe a little harsh. But still, though, if you want to give him a yellow, give him a yellow. But no, the red card came out. And that needs to be rescinded. If the league's disciplinary committee wants to make it a yellow card, then I don't have a problem with it. Because the truth of the matter is that Felipe did not deserve to be sent off. And that situation, not only with the mishap of the goal being allowed, which should never have been in the first place, that red card should never have been given in the first place, in the second place either. It is absolutely asinine to see what has happened here. Now let's go finishing up the audio. Captain of the Red Bulls, Dax McCarty. If I can play it.
Go ahead. Dax, it seemed like this game kind of boiled down to that one play where Kamara's down injured and they managed to get behind the defense. Basically playing him onside. What were your thoughts on the play that unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, clearly that was the play that decided the game. There's a few different ways you can look at it. I think from our standpoint, you know, maybe we're a little bit naive and maybe we can do more to, you know, let the ref know that we have a guy down injured and put it in his hands. But then again, I mean, I guess, you know, what are we doing? It's 2016. I guess we're asking refs to be doctors in the moment on the field. And so on one hand, it's in the ref's hands. If he decides it's a serious injury, he can blow the whistle. And if he doesn't, he doesn't have to. But then, you know, you would hope the team would recognize that and knock the ball out of bounds. But this is, I feel like in the game these days, sportsmanship is kind of, it's this novel concept that, you know, we love to talk about and think about, but I don't really think it exists anymore in the game these days. We're playing a desperate team at home that hasn't won yet this season, and they're probably thinking, let's do whatever we can to get 3 points. So, you know, they decide to do anything they can to get 3 points. I'd say that from their point of view, maybe they can argue and say, oh, they didn't see that we had a man down until they were already in the attacking half, and then they went on to score, and they kind of play the innocent party here. But then again, my argument back would be, well, Juan Aguadelo is in that position in the first place, just kind of camping out up there on the right wing because I think he sees that, you know, we have a player that's injured, and they still have possession of the ball. And so it's twofold, right? They have their players, they have the ball back in their defensive half, and they can say, all right, we can kick the ball out of bounds and let the injured player get treatment, or we can continue to attack and try to score off of it. So we're naive for not defending it well enough, and, you know, maybe Kamara can do a little bit more to, you know, hop around on one leg if he really has a serious injury and try to tackle a guy or foul a guy. But then that being said, if he's got a really serious injury, then what else is he supposed to do? He's waiting for treatment, and he's expecting the ball to go out of bounds and get treatment, but it doesn't happen. So it's a touchy subject. I can't sit here and say that I'm surprised about the way that, you know, they went about the game and they went about that moment. I mean, that's what desperate teams do, but obviously this is a contentious subject in the sport these days, and unfortunately, there wasn't very much in the game. I think both teams neither really deserved 3 points, but I think we definitely outplayed them on their home field. But it doesn't mean much. I don't think they're going to be apologizing for doing whatever they can do to get 3 points, so fair play to them.
What were your thoughts on the Patrick defense and stepping in for a banged up back one?
Well, I thought we limited them defensively. They have a lot of good attacking players, and I thought we, for the most part, shut down their attack. They didn't have much in the game. They had a couple shots that went wide. No really good chances. Luis didn't have to make too many saves rather than some outside shots, but I thought we came here and we managed the game well. I thought we created a few chances, a few half chances. You know, we're a little bit snake bit in front of the goal other than the Houston game. You know, we're not finding much luck or success in front of the goal, and that's a little unfortunate. But defensively, it was solid. You would always love to get a shutout, but as I've already gone into elaborate detail about how they scored their goal, for the most part, we were really solid defensively. In terms of the yeah, we'll respond. We have a lot of good players on this team. We just have to make sure that the guys on the bench and the guys that the young guys that are going to get an opportunity step up, and they don't miss a beat. So we have full confidence that we'll be able to start picking up a couple wins here.
And that's Dax McCarty on his opinion of the situation that happened in New England. And once again, it's just absolutely infuriating to see this team and to see inept officiating just continuing to make everyone feel like, is this job really being done the proper way? I would like to think that, honestly, I think Peter Walton has done everything he can. It just looks like the American referee just doesn't want to listen. I just feel like American referees are not doing the job correctly, and it's a shame. It is a shame to see a result being stolen like that from the Red Bulls. Now, obviously, this match will not be replayed, and here's the thing that I also believe. It's also a shame. When do you see referees in this league, or at least in this country, getting their fair share of real criticism? See, I'm not saying referees do not or should not be touched or anything like that. That these referees, they don't, they don't or should not be touched the wrong way. You know, they should not be taken out. They should not be kicked. They should not be this or that. They need to be taught a lesson when they're making these types of decisions on the field. If it's really this egregious, then by all means, they should be suspended. Look what the English FA does. If they feel that their own officials are in the wrong, then they will proceed properly. I don't know if U.S. Soccer will do this or MLS will do this, but the truth of the matter is, who is really running the referees? Is it the league or is it U.S. Soccer? Because the truth of the matter is, U.S. Soccer should be the ones that are designating the referees to play, to officiate certain matches, whether it's in MLS, the NASL, the USL, the PDL, and every single league that is under their umbrella. Once again, all I can say is that for the Red Bulls, what does this mean? What does this mean for them? Well, it's really simple. They have to go out and win. They have to put this result and this game out of their minds. They have to come home this Saturday, take on Sporting Kansas City at Red Bull Arena, 7 o'clock Eastern on MSG Plus 2. And check your local listings for the channel number at 7 o'clock Eastern. Because right now, they have a win and three losses to start the 2016 campaign. Amazingly enough, I just wrote an article about this on onceametro.com. Red Bulls are pulling a Metro, losing three of their first four games. And now, it's really simple. They can't worry about this anymore. Kemar Lawrence is injured at the moment. Hopefully, they'll get some of their players back, like Ronald Zubar and Gideon Ba, in that center back role, even though they've been doing pretty good. But for the Red Bulls, this match will be on MSG Plus 2 at 7 o'clock Eastern against a red-hot Sporting Kansas City. And they're going to have to start. They're really, really going to have to start converting. I mean, I know Bradley Wright Phillips is going to have to start converting these chances now because he's got to stop shooting the ball directly at the opposition's keeper. He's got to put it in. But still, though, the situation has to stop. And I really do hope. And I really do hope they find a way to convert, and I hope they find a way to finally get Bradley Wright Phillips going. Still plenty of season left over, obviously, that, you know, it's not going to fall apart this quickly. Jesse Marsh will get the troops ready and get the troops going. So, obviously, this should be a very, very big game for them. And hopefully, they'll go out and they'll do everything they can. So, we'll see what happens here as we go forward. Now, once again, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be that time of year. The draw to start the 2016 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, the first round proper, will begin on Wednesday, May 11th. But the draw to see who will be teaming up and facing whom in round one, those teams from the PDL, the U.S. Adult Soccer Association, the NPSL, the U.S. Club Soccer League, and the U.S. Sports Specialty Association, USSSA, as we get ready to see who will face whom in this 2016 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. This will be exciting. This will be a lot of fun. I personally cannot wait. We're all going to have some fun, folks. We're all going to have some fun. And I cannot wait for this to happen, and I cannot wait to see who will do the deed when it's time to kill off some giants. But you know what, folks? That's why we're going to have some fun here on Feuerstein's Fire, the American Soccer Show, blogtalkradio.com/Feuerstein's Fire. Once again, real heart and passion for the game in this country. You can hear it right here. Once again, you can listen to this over at onceametro.com, iTunes, the Ultimate Sports Talk website, ultimatesportstalk.com. Should be a lot of fun, should be exciting, and I personally cannot wait. I want to, first of all, once again, apologize for some technical issues with the Skype. Hopefully, they've been corrected and this won't happen again. Thanking my guests, of course, Jake Dudinsky, for talking about the under-23s losing in the qualifying for the Olympic playoff. I also want to thank Neil Morrison, WRAL sports fan, down in Cary, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. And once again, thank you for listening. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, I beg of you to please, please, enjoy your football. Thank you for listening tonight. Have a good night. Take care, everybody, and bye-bye for now. So long, everybody.